Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, hosted by Chris Featherstone and Derek of Crave Wrestling. This is the new Tuesday Night Titans.
Indeed it is. Ladies and gentlemen, episode 184, Pancakes and Power Slam Show. It is such a loaded show tonight, as it always is, but we got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to have a lot of interaction from all of the wonderful listeners over at WAWNation.com and Blog Talk Radio and Twitter. We're going to have a lot of fun with the Q&A tonight. The Chris Featherstone Q&A, it's been a while since we did it. We started a little bit last week, but we basically didn't have much time before and after the awesome interview by Greg Gagne. That was definitely one of the best interviews in the 3.5 years that I've been broadcasting live. And by the way, I need someone who's listening to do a little bit of research for me. I know there's a lot of awesome other podcasts, and you know, I'm not the podcast basher by any stretch. I appreciate fellow podcasters. I actually have a friend who him and I, we talk pretty often, and we encourage each other because he actually has a podcast that's been going on for a few years as well. And there's not a lot of consecutive, long-term, ongoing podcasts that give you fresh content every week on a consistent basis. And I just really thank all of the fans and listeners to the Pancakes Power Slam Show that we have been live on the air. And the thing is, I want someone to research the longest consecutive podcast that's going on right now. And we have been going on for 184 consecutive weeks. We have not missed a single week ever since we started in April of 2012. So the thing is, our goal is to break the record. So everybody who's listening right now, first of all, thank you. And second of all, if we can have a few people to do a little bit of research and check out some other podcasts, and see who is the longest, the top longest consecutive podcasts that are going on right now. So that is another goal for the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, to be one of the longest reigning consecutive podcasts that is going on in the United States, at least. So interesting research. Thank you all for the involvement. 184 consecutive weeks, and again, We have not missed a single week in 184 of them. So, and one of these days when we have enough time, I'm going to give you some very interesting stories. I have a studio now, but there was times where early on in the advent of the Pancakes and Power Slam show, I can definitely tell you some stories of where I aired the live show, and some very interesting stories that I have. So the Pancakes and Power Slam show has gone through a whole lot, and so thank you all for continuing to listen. And I mean, we just grow every week, and we just got, you know, we have so much buzz here in this show, and it's awesome. We get it's one of the most buzzworthy podcasts because we have some very interesting interviews, and just, you know, Greg Gagne was definitely one of the best interviews that the Pancakes and Power Slam show has ever experienced. It was just, absolutely amazing interview. And he and I talked, we communicated after the show, and we got our dates penciled in, and we'll make it official. We were both very elated about the podcast, about the interview last week, and he was very grateful. You know, just someone, there's people who I've interviewed. I'm not going to say any names about the bad ones, but there's people, and I've been 184 weeks, we've interviewed dozens of people in the 184 weeks, dozens of wrestlers. And there's some that are that was just a straight interview, you know, just thank you for the opportunity. It was a cool 45 to 60 minutes, and that was it. You know, it wasn't much after that. But there were some that actually were really cool, and I really appreciate them as human beings far more than wrestlers. And Greg Gagne is definitely one of those people. Very grateful for him to be such a legend in the business. And you know, just one of the legendary names, and all the rich stories that he told me, you know, that he not the podcast last week wasn't the only time that we communicated. We communicated before and after that, the interview last week, and just the stories that he gave me, and just the things that we're going to talk about on part two. Just so rich with good history, and I really appreciate people like that. That's you know, put so much blood, sweat, and tears in the business, and still appreciate the people who create them and make them who they are. With, you know, which are the fans, and so I appreciate people like that, and just, you know, people who appreciate opportunities to really share stories and give updates of their careers. I appreciate people like that. People like, you know, out of all the people I interviewed. And, you know, I've had some great, great interviews, but people like Tyler Rex, who I actually still speak with, I actually spoke with them a few days ago, JTG, who I still speak with, people like, you know, D'Lo Brown, who, you know, we text each other about the Bulls, and, you know, people like Matt Taven, great guy, he actually gave me and Ryan, another our senior analyst and live correspondent, he gave us free tickets to an ROH event. Matt Taven did. So, you know, he's people like Matt Taven and people like that, I appreciate even more because they're literally just a phone call away, you know, just, you know, and I appreciate people like that to grow a relationship with outside of just interviewing them. And so because they appreciate opportunities like this. They don't have a mentality that they're too good, you know, for this, and they appreciate times like this, and people like that. I actually like Hanson, another person who I interviewed. I actually met him after I interviewed him. I met him at an ROH event. He was like, oh yeah, you know, he remembered and everything. We talked for a while, so he's a good example of that too. So. You know, I really appreciate, you know, people like that. Moose, he sent me an email, you know, thanking me after his interview, and, you know, just really, really appreciate, you know, people like that who you know, they're not above opportunities like this. It really isn't. I'm looking at great. Keep mentioning names if y'all remember. If you're on the WAWNation.com or on Twitter, if you remember different interviews, you know, bring them up. I see Son of Havoc, Matt Cross. You know, that was another real good one. He was really a down earth guy, and he and I, we communicated. He actually, Matt Cross was, I think Moose might have done it too, but Matt Cross was the only one who sent me a very, very heartfelt email right after. I think it was maybe a day or two after I interviewed him. He sent me a long, heartfelt email just thanking me and appreciating the opportunity. See, people like that, I give mad respect to, because, you know, they didn't have to it's 11 o'clock Eastern time, so that's, you know, it's relatively late here in the States as far as, you know, time zone is concerned. But, and he lives, you know, it's not any, you know, better for him. But, you know, stuff like that, it's the little things that I appreciate the most, and stuff like that, just giving me a heartfelt thank you email right after the interview is very, I appreciate it very much. Crimson's agent, I remember when I interviewed Crimson, I was actually Crimson's first interview after his release. I was first person to interview him, and his agent was very thankful. She sent me a message thanking me for that too. So that was great too. So yeah, I mean, it's just awesome. I really appreciate the opportunities. You know, D'Lo Brown. Like I said, you know, D'Lo Brown. He was a great one too. We communicated after our interview as well. So. Just really, really good stuff, and just people who, you know, I haven't, I'm still talking to, but still haven't locked in a date for. I'll save those names for later, but there's some more coming up the pike too that I've been communicating with too. So it's great stuff. So awesome stuff. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, let's get into some Q&A.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
All right, let's get into some Q&A again, WAWNation.com. Or live on Twitter at Crave Wrestling. Send your tweets with your questions. Hashtag PanSlams, PanSlams, PanSlams. Right, before I get to the first question, I think I'm gonna do. People know how much of a traditionalist I am. I love old school wrestling. I was communicating with my fellow brethren at Rio Wrestling through message, and it's a great guy that is really involved in the show and just really passionate about the Pancakes Power Slam show. His name is Chris, actually. Great guy, just really just a strong advocate of the Pancakes and Power Slam show, and I was schooling him a little bit on the old wrestling, the Continental Wrestling Alliance, and the Continental Wrestling Association, and just sending videos and schooling him a little bit on old school wrestling, and you know, if you've listened to half of the 184 episodes, you'll know how much of a passionate old school wrestling fan that I am. I grew up in the 80s, actually, so, you know, just experiencing that as a kid in the 80s and being around, you know, when AWA was around, when World Class was around. I remember watching World Class in the 80s, too, and, of course, NWA and WWF at the time, of course, now WWE. Just being around, and I remember watching IWCCW, International World Class Championship Wrestling, came on like the wee hours in the morning, it was some station I wasn't managed to pick up. And I remember when Taz was there, and the manager when DDP was a manager, and it was just awesome to see. So I'll be posting every week now through the Blog Talk Radio site and also WAWNation.com. I'll be posting just random classic videos of the week. And now that I've already watched and just, you know, improved, either I've watched live or I've watched recently just to relive or just really kind of beef up my wrestling research. So very interesting. And this week was the Master of Pain, now known as The Undertaker, and of course Lord Humongous, which was, of course, better known as Sid. I remember watching CWA when Lord Humongous was a big heel. He had like some Jason mask on, and he became a babyface and aligned himself with Jerry Lawler while the Master of Pain was with Robert Fuller. And I'll tell you what, man, Robert Fuller was a heck of a promo guy. When he was the manager of Harlem Heat, and he had his, Bunkhouse stable with Bunkhouse Buck and who he actually teamed up with in CWA. He was used to be known as Jimmy Golden, and Buck and Dick Slater, and it was just really interesting to see them in WCW and then, you know, see them in the CWA. But I really never noticed how good of a promo guy Robert Fuller was. And or Colonel Robert Parker, and I was just really amazed at how good he was in the CWA. He was one of the top guys in the CWA. Had a great feud with Jeff Jarrett back then, and it was really good. The storyline was his dad. His dad is now deceased, and he was a promoter, and then Jeff Jarrett's dad, Jerry Jarrett, comes along and kind of steals his shine, and now Fuller has some resentment because of that for Jeff's dad, so he's going to take it out on Jeff. Just really good storylines, and Fuller was a pretty good promo guy. Yes, Downtown Bruno did manage Lord Humongous. He sure did. It was great stuff. All right, man, let's go to the first question. Great stuff so far. What got you started with the podcasting? I was a journalist long before I started podcasting, and I just love to write. I love writing. I'm a professional blogger, actually. I have my own blog site, visionunited.com with a Z. And just love blogging, love writing. And it's so funny. I think I might have shared this writing story beforehand. I started writing. One of my first writing opportunities was Hub Pages. And Hub Pages is a free blog site where you can just create your own account and just kind of work your way up with your blog posts. And I started writing for Hub Pages and had my own page. And I started writing weekly Raw columns. Every single week I wrote a Raw column. You know, didn't get paid a dime for it. It was just, you know, my way to make it into the business of journalism, writing for big sites. And so when I started writing for Hub Pages, it was the column was called Yes, No, Maybe. And after every single week, I would kind of just highlight different factors of the particular Raw that I thought was a yes, good parts of Raw, and then the no's, the bad parts of Raw, and then the maybes, the potential parts that may have some good storylines developing for them. So I wrote those consecutively for a number of weeks, and a number of months, really, actually. And I got to the point where I was like, you know what, I think I have enough in my portfolio to reach out to a big company. And so I actually submitted that. I submitted one of my articles to Bleacher Report. And, from all the talks I heard before, so many people were talking about how hard it was to get into the Bleacher Report and how much they how much they got rejected to even get a job there based on their writings and things like that. But I'm the type of guy, I'm so ambitious. As many people know, I'm in my PhD program, so I'm getting a PhD in a couple of years. I'll be finishing up, and I'll have my doctorate in forensic psychology. So I've always been a very goal oriented person. Like I've never been that guy. I've always been that guy where I can, like, 20 people can tell me that it didn't work for them, and that would not affect me not one bit. And that's I've always been that guy. It doesn't really matter what anybody else says about something I'm so ambitious and so goal-oriented about. It's just not going to stop me. I'm still going to pursue it. And so that's what happened with Bleacher Report. I submitted the writing, and within probably a week, I got the job at Bleacher Report to a regular, correspondent, which everybody starts off with a correspondent. And as a correspondent, I realized that I was getting a lot of reads, even with my writings in the very beginning. And so that inspired me to even expand my writing into podcasting. So I was, to have that, the writing and the ability to verbally express myself and through podcasting. And I've, I liked listening to podcasts and so forth. And so I was like, again, I was that guy. I'm that guy. I'm like, what's the difference between them and me? Nothing. So why don't I just start podcasting? And I didn't give up. And the first few weeks was some very disheartening numbers as far as the podcast. And then it started jumping up to four figures of live listeners really within the first month of the podcast. It jumped up to four. I could look at the numbers every week, and it jumped within the first month to like four figures. And so it was very encouraging that the content that I was sharing, one of the biggest ways that helped and biggest forms of that helping too was being able to put my podcast as an article on Bleacher Report. So that helped out a lot. And so just using the both of them in tandem to really help me out as a journalist and as a radio show host and a podcaster, it really got the ship sailing, and I haven't looked back since. 3.5 years later, I was one of the biggest. I was a feature columnist of the Bleacher Report, and that happened within the first month or so, because people climb up the ladder, and they were so impressed with my work that I actually jumped from a correspondent all the way to a feature columnist, and that usually takes people years to ascend to, because there's different levels with like certain amount of comments and reads you get. You kind of ascend. You get so many points, and you go up a level and so forth. But I actually jumped from the bottom of the pole to the top of the pole within a month because my writings was so popular at the Bleacher Report. So, I just used that leverage to help with my radio shows, and there you go. So I haven't looked back since. Great question. Next question. Let's see here what we have. What is the memorable angle? Good question. Let me answer this question here. A good question, kind of going into what I just said. When and how did you start getting this opportunity to interview the names you've been able to book? My first interview was a friend of mine who was an indie wrestler named Onyx. And he's been wrestling for quite some time. And that was my first interview. And so because I knew him, you know, it was a great time to say, well, okay, well, I got the show. Let's, you know, let's interview. And it was my first time ever interviewing. I mean, I've interviewed people as a journalist, but I've never interviewed people on my own podcast. So interviewing him was good. It was, I had some jitters, of course, because I never interviewed anyone, but he was a great person to start with because we were friends. So I knew him, and he wrestled with a lot of big names that you know now. And so it was a good way to kind of launch myself and to kind of test myself in interviewing people. And so as far as big names is concerned, my first interview was actually Elijah Burke, the 50th episode of Pancakes and Power Slams. We were celebrating the 50th episode, and Elijah Burke was my first interview. And just, you know, he was without, there wasn't much pulling teeth or anything. He was up for it. And I, you know, kind of, you know, presented myself, you know, writer for the Bleacher Report. You know, this podcast has been going on for, you know, we're celebrating our 50th episode, and just kind of giving him the spiel and presenting myself and kind of, you know, sending him my portfolio and giving him presentations, a presentation of my brand, you know, which is, of course, Crave Wrestling and the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. And it didn't take him no time to respond, and he was up for it. And so that was Elijah Burke. That was 179 episodes ago. Well, 129 episodes ago. Elijah Burke, and then Crimson, around the time Crimson, Caprice Coleman, and I just, you know, people, names like that. I just used the previous interviews to help with the presentation to show, kind of present my resume to different wrestlers. And so nowadays it's not very hard, it's not very difficult to get a wrestler because my portfolio, my resume is so packed that, you know, I'll just list the long list. I'll just name the long list of wrestlers that I've interviewed and how many episodes that I've had and how many listeners that I've had. And nowadays it's not very difficult to get people, to get big names in, because of the tenure of the show. So, great question. What would you say your favorite or most memorable angle is? Good question. I would have to say, because I'm such a sting mark, my most memorable angle was the Sting road to becoming the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Started with a time limit draw in Clash of Champions 89, and then around the, I think it was January of 90, he got initiated into the to the Four Horsemen. And they were expecting him to relinquish his title opportunity, and he still wanted it. And Ole Anderson was just hard-nosed and just really the villain, still the villain of the camp. They were more of a babyface faction at the time. And Flair was just kind of sitting back and just kind of in awe that Sting still wanted a title opportunity with Flair. And you know, Ole Anderson was just the he was just really the perpetrator into Flair making the turn again. And that really just set me on fire, just as a fan, just wanting Sting to have that opportunity to become the NWA World Heavyweight Champion in 1990. And of course, my biggest markout moment was you know, summer of 1990, Great American Bash, when you know he was with the Dudes with Attitudes in ringside, and he defeated Ric Flair to win his first ever NWA World Heavyweight Championship. So that was my favorite and most memorable angle. A couple more questions. Where do you see mainstream professional wrestling in 5 to 10 years? Kevin Owens brought up Onyx when first being brought to NXT. Oh, cool. Sweet. I did not know that. That's awesome. Onyx is a friend of mine, and that's great. Where do you see mainstream professional wrestling 5 to 10 years in the U.S.? And my thoughts on New Japan. Mainstream wrestling in 5 to 10 years, I don't see much of a difference than it is now. I think NXT would be diluted by that time, unfortunately. I think that NXT would be more of a SmackDown. And SmackDown has been diluted so much these days. It's ridiculous. I remember back in the early 2000s during the Ruthless Aggression era, where when Heyman booked SmackDown, and it really was, it was literally better than Raw. It was just, Raw was the B show compared to SmackDown. SmackDown was such an amazing show. It was just laced with good wrestling. And just so many names that were just amazing at the time. That was, you know, The Undertaker was just running roughshod on SmackDown at the time. And then, of course, you had the draft. You know, there were so many good names. Eddie Guerrero, you know, I'm going to say his name, although he's a jerk, Chris Benoit. You know, Rey Mysterio, Kurt Angle. All those names were just really, Brock Lesnar is another one, just making SmackDown just an amazing brand to watch. And it's been so diluted since then, past dozen years. It's ridiculous. I think the end of the draft was just a horrible idea, because it really, the split really gave an opportunity for people to shine. To me, if there was no split, JBL would not be in the position that he is. That he was of being world champion. I would say people like Eddie Guerrero wouldn't have had the shine that he did. I would say people like Rey Mysterio wouldn't have had the shine that he did. You know, there's a number of people that wouldn't have been able to get the opportunities that they had. Cody Rhodes was another guy. Because of the split, he became his own person, left a legacy, got drafted to SmackDown, and just really became such an amazing heel with his dashing was okay, but just the paper bag character was just an amazing idea and a great, or without question to me, that was Cody Rhodes' best time in the WWE for sure. And unfortunately, I think NXT is going to be that way in 5 to 10 years. I think NXT, because to be honest with you, I remember going to NXT events, you know, earlier this year and, you know, late last year. It was such an amazing independent type feel to it that just was such a huge jump from the developmental territory that it was when Seth Rollins was champ and Big E was champ. Such a huge jump. Became its own entity, and I said this before, it should remain its own entity. But now you've got people doing double duty like Sasha Banks and Kevin, you know, for a while, Kevin Owens and Paige, you know, pulled double duty for a while too. And just, you know, with all these huge shows that they're doing now, you're bringing casuals into a brand that shouldn't be, you know, you're bringing casuals into a brand that is not suitable and not suited for casuals, if that makes sense. I'll say it again. You're bringing you're bringing casuals into a brand that's not suited for casuals, and that's NXT. And the more you dilute the brand with casuals, casual fans is what I mean, the more you make it into an entertainment show. And NXT is not necessarily accustomed or fashioned to be an entertainment show. It's a wrestling show. It's, you know, it reminds me of an independent show mixed with classic NWA World Championship wrestling feel to it. Just a small venue like Full Sail, you know, it seats 300 people, just that indie, genuine, passionate feel. But now you're adding on to it so much, and just kind of just, you know, the brand to me, the NXT brand to me is just throughout this year, it's been diluted so much that, you know, people like Finn Balor, who deserves to have the same shine as, like, you know, Neville and when Neville was champ, and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, when they were all champs when the product was special and amazing and separate. Now Finn Balor is champ when the product is starting to have too much of a WWE injection in it. And unfortunately, that's making, you know, his reign not as exciting as, you know, the aforementioned reigns. And that's very unfortunate. So that's where I think that mainstream wrestling will be in the next 5 to 10 years. As far as New Japan, I have a Bullet Club hoodie. That pretty much explains my love for New Japan wrestling. I love New Japan's partnership with ROH. I think it's absolutely amazing. I love the global wars that they do, and just bringing the names into ROH. And I DVR actually New Japan on my TV and watch it. It's not current. It's about a year. It's about a year out, but it still gives me the opportunity to watch some great matches like Bad Luck Fale against Shinsuke Nakamura for the Intercontinental title. When Fale actually beat Nakamura, that was a great match, very good match. So just watching New Japan and just seeing people like Trent Beretta, who's actually just Beretta now, and you know, of course, AJ Styles and people like that have really a second chance in New Japan. Of course, people like D.H. Smith and Lance Hoyt, people like that, Doc Gallows, people like that having a second chance in New Japan is really, really good. And one of my favorite wrestlers is Carl Anderson, and just, you know, I think that Carl Anderson should be a world champ in the States somewhere. I think, you know, I think people like Carl Anderson, if GFW wants a shot, they need Carl Anderson. And I think that Carl Anderson, you know, he was in and out of ROH, but, you know, people like Carl Anderson should be world champ in somewhere like ROH or NXT. I think Carl Anderson, just his skill set is absolutely incredible, as one of the best cutters in the business, and is just a very fluid wrestler, just an amazing wrestler. I've followed Carl Anderson for a number of years now, and just formed a great team with Giant Bernard, and just a really, really excellent wrestler. And it's just really good to see, you know, to see people like that. So, awesome stuff. One more question. Let's see. Man, these are some really, really good questions. Really, really good questions. Oh goodness. I think I might ask you all to keep it going because this is really good. Some really good questions. What made you first fall in love with pro wrestling? Great question. This is sentimental. Please don't feel like you're not man enough to pull out some tissues right now because you may need some. My great grandmother, she passed when I was in 1995. And I was a teenager, and she was an avid wrestling fan. She when I was growing up, she was in her 60s, and she was in a cane at the time, and not necessarily poor health, but declining health. And she, even with her cane. And even with her declining health, she had a recliner. She had the infamous recliner, the throne. And she was a 60-plus year old woman was absolutely fascinated with professional wrestling. I mean, I kid you not. I mean, she watched every single episode of wrestling when I grew up. And that's the reason why I know so much wrestling is because of her. I watched all of the Clash of the Champions. I watched all of the WCW Saturday nights, all of the Raws, you know, from 93 on. She passed in 95. So in Raw started in 93. I watched all of the Superstars, the All-Star Wrestlings, the AWA on ESPN, GWF. I watched all of those wrestling. I watched all of those shows. And it's so funny because I was a big fan of Pressure Luck as well. I don't know if you all know that, the game show with the whammy. And I used to watch Pressure Luck, and I used to go back and forth between Pressure Luck and GWF on ESPN in the early 90s, and I would be one of the first things I would do after school. I would go to school, the bus would come back home, and I would watch AWA and GWF. And she was just adamant. She would just allow me to watch all of those wrestling shows. And, you know, she passed, unfortunately, you know, she passed when I was 14, I was in 1995, and the people, cause I have a brother a year younger than I am, and he was a big wrestling fan when he was a kid, but he stopped watching wrestling, but wrestling never left my interest. It never left my interest. There has not been one single time from birth to now that I ever stopped watching wrestling. And I would give the most credit to her as just an homage of her. She was, you know, my biggest inspiration as a kid. She was my coach. She was, you know, my disciplinarian. She made sure that I was kept myself in gear, and she was an avid wrestling fan. And when she passed, it was just the most. It was the biggest thing. It was the most collapsing feeling that I've ever felt, and still to this day, the most incredible collapsing feeling that I've ever had is when I found out she passed away, and then to carry on her legacy, I still watch wrestling, and when she passed, and still watch it now. So there you go. That's how I started watching wrestling. Couple more, and then we'll get to Raw. What was the worst angle of all time? I'll do a couple lightning questions. I'll make them a little shorter. What was the worst? What was the worst angle of all time? Higher power angle. That was just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, Katie Vick is up there. But that was more of a segment. You know, the feud between Kane and Triple H wasn't that bad, but Katie Vick was horrible. But just the higher power gimmick was just incredibly stupid. It was just ridiculous, and just, and what made it even worse was it was Vince McMahon. So at the end of the day, it makes sense. The higher power is Vince McMahon. The irony in that is just is very eerie. Do you think Lucha Underground will continue to have the success they had last year and penetrate into mainstream? I think El Rey is not a very popular station. A lot of people don't have El Rey. So if they manage to get a better station, or not a better station, but a station that's more that's in more homes, I think that'll work very good. So why do you think pro wrestling media in the States continually seems to ignore Mexico? For the large part, many people have developed themselves on who they'd be in their careers. Many find a new breath of life in their wrestling careers, and many wrestlers that would be considered Hall of Fame characters in Mexico, but continually ignored. The style, the Mexican style is so much different than the American style. The luchador type style. Well, Mexico, it's a very they concentrate on characters, and like, you know, the characters are gods, you know, in the history of Mexican wrestling. Of course, you know, people like Dos Caras, Perro Aguayo, Blue Demon, you know, people like that, and is some of the most popular, you know, wrestlers of all time from the Mexican, from Mexico. Mil Mascaras, of course, and just people like that is just so, their gimmick is so popular, and they're like, you know, rock stars in Mexico. But unfortunately, they don't get the same type of shine here in the States, because they've probably already had their rock star, quote unquote, and they just don't have that type of appeal to promoters here in the States, unfortunately. So that is unfortunate for sure. All right, let's do one more question. There's a few of them that are good in here. Let's do one more question. All right, so the last question is this. If you have the opportunity to book a New Japan versus WWE cross-promotion event, what matchup would you build the event around? And if you can, what are some few undercard matches you book? All right. That's a flavor of the week question, but I'll condense it to this. The biggest the biggest feud I would have right now from the current WWE and New Japan would be headlined by Brock Lesnar versus Fale. Bad Luck Fale versus Brock Lesnar. That would be my biggest event. I would put the Intercontinental title on Fale, and I would do the Intercontinental title versus the, because, I mean, when Nakamura won the New Japan, when the IWGP Intercontinental title, it became, I mean, it actually main evented a Wrestle Kingdom event, so I would put it on. I mean, because I wouldn't say put the world strap on him, because, you know, him and AJ are both, well, actually, if I'm not mistaken, Okada has it now. I wouldn't say Okada versus Lesnar because I wouldn't. I don't think that. I mean, I'm a big Rainmaker fan, but Lesnar needs someone who can, you know, stand toe to toe with them, and I think Fale would be a good person who would do that. So I would have the Intercontinental title, New Japan Intercontinental title, Brock Lesnar versus Bad Luck Fale. That would be my big event, my main event. Undercard matches, I would have, for the WWE title, I would have Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles. I would have, tag team matches, Anderson and Gallows against the Dudleys. I think that would be a great match. The New Day against Roppongi Vice. And Tanahashi versus Randy Orton. That would be my big matches right there. So awesome time there. And then I would probably do, yeah. And the reason why I'm saying those names are over at the time. Now, if I had some time to build names, I would build up Jack Swagger. I would have like Jack Swagger versus Yuji Nagata. I would have like Cesaro go against Shibata. Stuff like that, you know, that would be very, I would have those matches too. If I had time, you know, had time to build those names. So, yep, that would be my current card. So awesome time. We shall do this again. Very, very fun stuff. And we are going to get started with Raw right after this.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free. Our mind, let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we taking this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God. Get out the big boys way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings, you see in us. But our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash Wunderkin with the strength of 100 men, with one intent, to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating I was frostbit, now I am Glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals, you and God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful. Bobby Eaton, me and Priest, we the dangerous alliance. Nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep. You all what you speak. This too sweet.
Till the genre is took back. We repping that wolf pack. The foundation shaking. No mistaking. Yeah, we shook that. Plus in God we trust. Pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness. Some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap. He turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You too, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, fun time. We got to do that sooner than later. That was a great Q&A there. Very, very successful. Another match that I randomly thought about was the Time Splitters against the New Day would be pretty cool too. I think that they would complement each other very, very well. Derek, how's the baddest co-host on the planet tonight?
Hey, the co-host on the baddest planet, the baddest co-host of the planet, doing great, Chris. However, I was late getting here today. The Pancakes and Power Slams company car broke down, and I was stranded on the side of the front of the Astrodome, and so now I'm here. I got to the Pancakes and Power Slam studios. What's been going on? What did I miss? Anything good? What's going on?
Some great Q&A, man. We just spent the last nearly hour with some really good Q&A from my great-grandma being the most inspirational pro wrestling fan to booking a WWE and New Japan card. So really, really good stuff. And, of course, now we're going to – Yeah. You know what? If you guys check out an old Bleacher Report article that I wrote a while ago, I actually did that with WWE and TNA. So check that out if you may. I did a cross promotion of WWE and TNA. Let's get into Raw. There's not much to talk about in Raw. That's the reason why I was so happy that we had a great Q&A, because that was much more inspiring and memorable than the Raw episode, unfortunately. Let's start off with Paul Heyman with Brock Lesnar doing an in-ring promo interrupted by the Big Show. And you know what's so funny? Their match at Madison Square Garden was actually not horribly booked. It was a good way for Big Show to have some type of credit instead of just a squash match. You know, the three choke slams was pretty good. And Show actually looked like a threat to Brock Lesnar for a few minutes at least. And, of course, he walked right into Suplex City. But, this is just building Brock Lesnar for his quote-unquote go-to-hell tour, and the very weird booking against the weirdly announced match against The Undertaker at Hell in a Cell, which I really hope ends this feud without question. But it makes me wonder, though, why are they building Brock Lesnar this much? He doesn't, again, I've said this before, Brock Lesnar does not need the build at all. He doesn't need any type of build. It wouldn't make sense to build him this strongly to beat The Undertaker, because he doesn't need that, because he already ended the streak. So it makes me wonder, does The Undertaker actually have a shot of beating Brock Lesnar at Hell in a Cell?
It could be. It could very well be. Brock Lesnar's been there at least, might be going on 3 years now. And you could see that. If that happens, that would definitely be The Undertaker's last match, I'd assume. You got to let him go out on top, out with a bang. Would that really ruin anything with Brock Lesnar? I don't think so. They all easily could have ended that at SummerSlam and been done with it. But they wanted to drag it out. That's fine. Hell in a Cell, that's great. That's Undertaker's territory. It's like, I'm looking forward to the match. It's the final of the final trilogy. This could be the last big battle we see with Brock Lesnar. However, it's and The Undertaker. But we'll see where it goes to. And I'm convinced that Brock Lesnar will probably lose this match. I mean, it would go through extremes. He's probably going to do stuff that he's never done before as far as just hits he takes and bumps. So, yeah, it's going to be a free-for-all, and I really believe that The Undertaker's probably going to come out this way with no controversial ending like at SummerSlam. That was such a waste.
It
but
was,
I guess
yeah.
They knew they're dragging out to this, so yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, I honestly think that it'd lead up to a Brock Lesnar loss, legit loss.
You know what? I don't disagree with you on that. I think that Taker actually may win this match, and And, you know, it's taken a lot out of me to say that. Of course, I'm a lifelong Taker fan, but I, you know, watching him at SummerSlam was just, it was really painful. And I tweeted this during the match. It was really painful to watch The Undertaker against Brock Lesnar because it wasn't, it didn't take him much time at all to be like, totally fatigued from, you know, going back and forth with Brock Lesnar. I remember him doing his patented leg drop on the apron and, you know, turning around and putting his hands on his hips. And I've been a football player and I've been a personal trainer since 2005. And that is one of the telltale signs of I am drained. Is I got my hands on my hips, I'm exhausted, and I'm about a few seconds away from done. And yeah, it was really tough to watch Taker fight. So he'll have two more months, you know, from SummerSlam to Hell in a Cell. He'll have two more months to get his endurance up. Just because he's 50 years old doesn't mean that he can, you know, doesn't have to have low endurance. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that just because someone's 50. I mean, there's people who are 50 who are in much better shape than people, you know, 30 years younger than them that can hang and, you know, last an hour, you know, longer than someone half their age. So that just because he's 50 doesn't mean he's, you know, just because doesn't mean he's the end of the world. Look at Sting. Sting got in phenomenal shape at 56 years old when he went against Seth Rollins at Night of Champions. And so, you know, you can't say just because he's 50 it means he doesn't have endurance. Of course, he won't be able to be the same Undertaker as he was in 1990. But at the same time, you know, the level of endurance that The Undertaker had last year and this year was a little better, but it was still, you know, painful to watch. But if it's a slow, methodical match, it's a gimmick match. So, you know, there was no gimmick match at SummerSlam, so it made it even tougher because there was no gimmick to kind of protect The Undertaker. However, it's a gimmick match this time. It's Hell in a Cell. So the cadence can be a lot slower as long as they, you know, do the spots on the cage and so forth. So the cadence can be a lot slower and people can still be into it this time because it's a gimmick match. So I think that will go in Undertaker's favor. So I think it actually may. I mean, I think it'll be a much better match than what we saw at SummerSlam and of course at last year at WrestleMania. I think this will probably be the best match that they'll have. But, you know, funny enough, Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker, you know, over a dozen years ago, in a Hell in a Cell match. So are they going to have Lesnar do that again? So, you know, it's just, it's interesting because they, you know, Taker actually may do it. So that would be very interesting to see. Just strolling through the rest of the card last night, Monday Night on Raw. Reigns, Ambrose, and Orton defeating the Wyatt family. Now, this did come to a surprise to me. First of all, they're having this, they build Night of Champions to have a mystery partner for the Wyatt family, for Shield 2.0. They built it to have a mystery partner for it to be Jericho, who, by the way, great speech at MSG. You can just tell if you haven't watched that, if anybody haven't watched that yet, you're not missing much, to be honest with you, because it wasn't very good. But at the same time, the Jericho-Owens match was good, and I knew it was going to be. But that speech that Jericho did before the match with Owens was very heartfelt. You can tell it was literally his 25th year wrestling. And of course, in Jericho fashion, in typical Jericho fashion, even with it being 25 years of wrestling in the business, and his very first match being against who, which is the first trivia question of the night, and that's being a draw. He didn't even lose his first match. It was a draw. But 25 years later, he lost. Typical Jericho fashion. But it was a great interview. It was a great promo, rather, very heartfelt, and it was good stuff. He mentioned the answer to the trivia question. He also mentioned Don Callis from ECW. So that was I never knew that Jericho and Callis had that type of relationship, and it was really cool to see that. So that was really cool. But, you know, other than that, it wasn't anything to really, you know, hold their head up high for as far as the MSG event. It wasn't horrible, but it just wasn't really memorable. But you're building this feud around this mystery person. Who's the mystery guy? So you got the mystery guy. It's Jericho, you know. Big flop. That was a big flop to even put Jericho in that situation. And then you just kind of do a brush off win with Orton being the guy that can beat the Wyatt family. And you do it on a Raw 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. So it just doesn't make any sense. And it's just really making me wonder, like, what in the world are you going to do with Orton? You got one of the highest paid people in the entire company just kind of floundering through feuds the whole year. I mean, yeah, they threw him in with Seth Rollins. Him and Seth Rollins wasn't a horrible feud, but at the same time, it really wasn't going to lead to anything because Orton wasn't going to win the title. And then him and Sheamus was just not good. There was nothing about Orton versus Sheamus that intrigued me at all. And now he's with, you know, the Wyatt family. He's just been floundering around just about the entire year. And Randy Orton has been just a bore to me for quite some time. I mean, when he turned heel and went with the Authority, that was some revival to his career. But other than that, I mean, he's been a bore to me for a number of years, unfortunately. The feud with him and Christian, it was good matches, but it was still not very interesting from a Randy Orton standpoint. And then he's was feuding people like Barrett for a little bit and Cody Rhodes for a little bit. And he's just been floundering in feuds for the past few years and just really haven't made me interested in him at all. And so, you know, for someone who gets paid so much, has been such a staple in the business for so long. I mean, he started the same year as Cena did. And, yeah, he's been champ 11 times, but, I mean, maybe one or two of them I could really remember for, you know, that was actually memorable. And so I just really don't know what's next for Orton and Ambrose too. I mean, he's just kind of he's right in that Orton boat, just floundering with feuds. Just, I mean, there's reports of him possibly being pushed and Cena's, you know, going to take time off, but they already tried that earlier this year when he was feuding with Seth Rollins. It just didn't really work out that much, and I doubt that rumor will come true. I don't think that they'll make Ambrose a main eventer again if they didn't see him be good enough earlier this year. I just don't see the difference between now and springtime, you know, and so spring and summertime when he was in the main event. So, I don't see much with that either. So Ambrose and Orton, those are just really two names that just, to be honest with you, don't really interest me at all.
I can really see where you're coming from. Orton's been a lame duck for so long, and honestly, he's probably been a lame duck since Evolution dissolved. I mean, he's never been that interesting. He almost kind of reminds me like a, I don't want to say like a modern day Mike Rotundo or a Barry Windham of sorts. That, you know, he just never, you know, he has a lot of success, but he's not, just doesn't have that it factor. With Ambrose, he is going in that direction. However, I mean, it's almost like Roman Reigns. I mean, he just needs to build. They could have made Roman Reigns champion last WrestleMania. It would have made a hill of beans today. But because they didn't, maybe there's something to it. Maybe they're just trying to build him. I mean, Ambrose, obviously, you want to keep around for a while because he's somebody that can just execute anything you want. Same thing like Orton. He can always get the job done, but he's just not somebody to really – Orton, it's too late for Orton. He's done. Ambrose and Reigns still have a chance to do something, make something of themselves. I remember hearing that Ambrose might take a leave of absence if he comes back. Maybe he could be a different character, be a different, you know, maybe be a heel this time. Again, it's really great material they're working with. You don't know, you know, they can go. They can almost do it and beat it. Orton, again, it's too late. I mean, he's probably had the peak of his career. You just, how much time can you give somebody to really build people in? I don't know a single person that says, I'm going to Raw because I want to see Randy Orton. So,
right. Exactly.
It's one of those unfortunate things with wrestling.
I don't think Randy Orton was ever that guy, though. That's the thing. I remember times where, and I'm not the big, you know, I'm not a big mark of wrestlers. You know, there's a few that, you know, I'm a mark of, like, you know, Big E and Finn Balor. But that's not, I'm just not that guy. I just don't really, maybe because I know the inside of wrestling so much now, and I'm still a fan. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still a fan, but I'm an insider now. I know stuff. And so just, it's really hard to mark out on certain wrestlers now. But still, and I'm still a fan. Like I said, I still mark out on certain wrestlers. And I remember one time, even before I was, you know, years ago, probably about 10 years ago, no, more like, yeah, more like 05, 06, I was a mark for Batista. And I know you don't like Batista at all. And, you know, there was only a hiccup that I was really big on Batista, but I was like, I mean, when he was a huge face on SmackDown, and just, you know, SmackDown was just the show to watch, and just the, you know, the theme music, people would just erupt. Like, I would be there live, and people would erupt for Batista, and the whole cannons, you know, the pyro matching with the, you know, with the cannon gestures, and it was just a sight to see. And Batista was incredibly over. He's never been, you know, the best wrestler by any stretch, not even a very good wrestler, but his character was way over. And if Batista, who also, you know, was in that class with Cena and Orton, if, and of course Cena speaks for herself, but if Batista, even from, you know, even with the, what, 5 years that Batista was really, you know, really cemented in the WWE as a top player and as a wrestler, I would say probably six, because he started as the Deacon in Evolution. So I would say probably about 7 years or so that Batista was, you know, a main player. But just as far as being a top guy, probably about five, I would say four or five. But it's like, even with that amount of time, Batista was just insanely over. But to me, Orton has never been that guy to me. He's never been the guy. Batista was the guy. Cena was the guy. Orton was never, to me, the guy. And it's just something about Orton. I mean, he's a very fluid wrestler. He's a solid wrestler in the ring, but it's just something about Orton that just never clicked to me. Sheamus defeating Neville. Neville unintentionally distracted by King Barrett. This is just a mid-card fluff feud, really. Kane offers to be Rollins' partner. Rollins refuses. Stephanie comes out and, you know, officially, and she breaks up the argument and officially books Rollins versus Kane. And then if Rollins beats Kane, corporate Kane is gone. Like, we're supposed to actually believe or really care that that means anything, and it doesn't. Natalya defeating Paige, which was interesting that it was just a clean tap out. But kudos to Natalya. She deserves it. Owens defeating Sin Cara. Okay. Dudley Boyz defeating Rollins and Kane. Demon Kane attacks Rollins post-match and then gets 3D'd based on what happened on SmackDown. Kane comes back up and choke slams Rollins to the table. Of course, just building Rollins to be the weak link again. It hasn't worked. Just building Rollins this way just hasn't worked. I don't know why they're continuing to do it. He's been one of the weakest build. He's been one of the weakest booked world champions in the past, I would say the past decade. He has been such a weakly booked world champion. It's been ridiculous. He's losing consecutive matches, including the steel cage match at MSG. He's losing. I don't care who it is. You're losing consecutive matches for the United States Championship. Like, you're the world champ, but you're losing matches for the United States Championship. Like, how much sense does that make? It doesn't make any sense at all. Team Bad defeating Team Bella, and then this, and I'll let you chime in on this crap. The Summer Rae introduces the Rusev, and then they get a tribute video, and then Summer asks Rusev to marry him, and then he says yes, but not yet, and he'll marry her when he gets gold on his waist. What in the world was the point of this segment?
The point of the segment was pretty much to make everybody turn the channel. It was, what are they trying to do? All of a sudden, you know, you have this big Bulgarian giant, which 12 months ago, he was a legitimate guy, a heel. And now he's this shape, an idiot. It sucks. I mean, there's really not a whole lot to say that other than Team Bad. I mean, this is bad. I mean, the Divas division has been garbage. We talk about it every week. You got the Revolution coming in. Hasn't changed a thing. When they keep putting stuff like, I mean, it just criminalizes Rusev to make him just look like I don't know what to compare it to, really. I mean, Dino Bravo didn't do things like that back in the day. Canada's strongman. I mean, he's a legitimate strongman. They turned this guy into this weak mush. It's stupid. I can't stand the fact that it's gone on this long, Chris. And it was the worst segment of Raw I've seen in years. And who cares if they get married? I don't care. Nobody cares. This whole feud with Ziggler is old, done. Nobody wants to see it anymore. I'd rather see Dolph Ziggler wrestle a broom other than go against Rusev again. There's
Moppy.
To it.
Ziggler versus Moppy.
Moppy! Perry Saturn. We need to get Perry Saturn on this show with Moppy.
Yeah, with Moppy. But yeah, let's interview both of them.
There's nothing else you can say about Rusev getting married. And obviously, Lana is going to be coming back soon. There's going to be more. They're just going to carry this out until they don't even know what to do with it. We say it every week, Chris. It's a broken record.
Yeah, unfortunately, man. This is just ridiculous. This is just a prime example of just poor forecasting or foreshadowing when you come with booking. Just horrible planning. It just really. I mean, I'd imagine Lana being injured and getting surgery kind of put a huge monkey wrench in plans, but come on now. There could be so much more that Rusev could be doing right now. He could go back to his just dominant spree where he's just beating up mid-carders, you know, galore. That could be helping his character right now while Lana gets healed and recovered. And then when Lana comes back, you know, he ditches Summer Rae and goes back with Lana. I mean, then he's back to Wrecking Machine again, which he needs. Who played the fake Razor Ramon? Who played the fake Razor Ramon? And that'll be a Flavor of the Week question here coming soon. The heel Jim Ross days with the fake Diesel and fake Razor Ramon. Moppy and Pepe should tag. That's hilarious. And then we get the U.S. Open Challenge with Big E accepting. I knew that Cena was going to win. I was hoping that, you know, with the time that he's supposed to take off, this would be the time where, you know, he would drop the title because he doesn't have a match scheduled for Hell in a Cell. But, yeah, of course, he wins. But what is interesting, or the lack thereof, really, is when, at the end, well, I love the fact that New Day reigned supreme. That was surprising, but it was a great and different way to end Raw. But the accidental super kick that Ziggler did on Cena, there's some rumors that we'll see a Ziggler versus Cena U.S. title match, you know, kind of transitioning to Total Divas crap with Ziggler still liking Nikki. I mean, to me, that just has the fakeness of Total Divas written all over it. Like, just the storyline behind that. Like, what is up with Dolph Ziggler and females in the WWE? Caitlyn, AJ, I mean, just, it's ridiculous what they're doing with, you know, Dolph Ziggler and just random females in the WWE over the years. And Nikki Bella, you know, apparently is going to be the next one. And just, first of all, I don't want to see a U.S. title feud between Dolph Ziggler and John Cena. And second of all, I certainly don't want to see it over, you know, over the love of Nikki Bella. That just has ridiculousness and just boredom written all over it. I mean, if you're going to make someone U.S. champion, actually spend time to push another star. Make someone else over. Put it on Cesaro. This is his first U.S. title reign. He was just really getting his feet wet in the WWE, and he was with Oksana, and they just wanted to push him because people knew him in the indies. And so his first U.S. title reign wasn't very good at all, actually. And so he's, you know, as of before a few weeks ago when they just start burying him, he was way over. Would have been a perfect time to give him the U.S. title. And, you know, Cesaro would be a good name to have the title. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know, bring Zepp Coulter back and have Jack Swagger beat John Cena for the U.S. title. Swagger and Cena's had some good matches on Raw before. So, you know, and I would still keep Swagger babyface. So, I mean, there's other names that you can really spend time to push to make, you know, good stars. And so, Cena versus Ziggler is just something I do not want whatsoever. And either that's going to happen, or because the New Day beat up on Ziggler, they may have, you know, the New Day and Ziggler versus, you know, they might have the Dudleys and Dolph Ziggler versus the New Day, just to kind of have a throwaway match at TLC, not at TLC, but at Hell in a Cell. They'll probably have a 6-man match like that. It wouldn't surprise me if they don't do Cena versus Ziggler. But either or, I mean, I wouldn't be totally opposed to Ziggler and the Dudleys against the New Day, but I would be totally opposed to Ziggler versus Cena.
With Ziggler versus Cena, I mean, Cena's got to drop the title. He needs time off. I believe that when I see it. When I see John Cena out there for a consecutive 2 weeks, all right, this guy's going to be gone for a while. What's the WWE going to do? What's going to be the shape of the WWE? What are they going to do without John Cena? All right, well, that's time to shine for the Zigglers and the Swaggers and Cesaros and everybody else. But it's kind of up in the air, like you said. I mean, John Cena doesn't even have a match for this coming pay-per-view. They'll throw one in there, obviously. They'll maybe make it 4 hours long again for whatever reason. But he just needs to drop the title, get out of the scene for a while, let the mid-card talent with the U.S. title really flourish, and then we'll see what goes on. I mean, the Swagger, I mean, bring him back. That would be great. He did have great matches with John Cena, and he's someone that it would be legitimate if he won. I mean, the crowd would erupt. That would be absolutely phenomenal. Cena loses, takes a bout for a while. Same thing with Cesaro. I'd almost rather see it on Cesaro. Just let the guy do his thing, part of the Brass Ring Club or whatever, but he always seems to be in trouble in the backstage for whatever reason. You just don't see him anymore. Even when he's on the cusp of being an absolute great superstar, they throw him away and put him to the side and let John Cena come out with the belt. So, I mean, with their championships right now, the WWE, it's horrible. I mean, you've got, again, Seth Rollins, you're supposed to celebrate the championship. You're supposed to celebrate he's a champion, everyone gets behind him, and this guy just sneaks and weasels his way out of everything and just wins by some technicality and default. That's not how the champion's supposed to be decorated. I get it. It's part of the angle. It's what they're doing now, but it's gone on a little too long, and the ratings are dropping. I mean, proof is in the pudding. What are you going to do with that?
Very well said. Very well said. Another great comment here. There should always be a few people at the top, and they should always have the rock, paper, scissors deal. A beats B, B beats C, C beats D, D beats A. Absolutely true. We talked about that in previous episodes, probably a week or two ago, that the Attitude Era was like that. I mean, you had Rock, Foley, Austin, Triple H, Taker. And it was just those were the five, and you had a six with people like Jericho, and there was there were a solid five or six people that were just top guys, and they would just trade victories, and that's how it should be. And of course Kurt Angle too, he was up there too in the in the early 2000s. So you had a solid seven people, five to seven people up on the top, and that's what really caused it to just really thrive. You got someone who's injured, and you don't really miss a beat because there's so many guys on top. So, all right, real quick, flavor of the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
Because of time, give me a 30-second synopsis of what your thoughts are on the future of TNA wrestling.
Future of TNA wrestling, honestly, it seems like, again, I've never been a TNA guy. I watch it every now and then, bits and pieces, and I've got friends that are in TNA. And it's still not to a point where it's ever going to compete with WWE. It was never a contender for the WWE. If you watch it, if you get Destination America, it's great. Rumors are it's going to be changing soon to a different cable station maybe. But who would put their time and money and effort into this promotion? I mean, honestly, unfortunately, Kurt Angle's there, and you got the Hardys there. Yeah, numerous other Anderson. And it's you don't know what to do with these people. It's like almost like WCW was at the last couple months of its tenure. And you just can't save this federation to where it's going to be something legitimate. And you've got everyone that's going to watch it. And again, it's almost like NXT is so much better. ROH is so much better.
Oh, yeah.
TNA, you're supposed to be a bigger score. You're supposed to be a bigger sell, but we just don't see it. We never have seen it. There might be glimpses, but, you've wasted all that away. And what it is now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. And there's so much I've said about TNA, how much I used to be a fan, and I still watch TNA. I still watch it every week. And it's painful to watch, mostly, Matt Hardy's the world champ. I'm not totally opposed to that as much as everybody else is. I think Matt Hardy has put his dues in the wrestling to be TNA champ out of anything. I'm not opposed to that, actually. EC3 is money, he's a great heel, but you know, he'll get it back and put it on Matt Hardy. And they're talking, you know, there's reports of him relinquishing the title about this, whatever is going on as far as the angle is concerned. So it's not horrible, but we'll talk about TNA more later. The bottom line to me is that it's really a sinking ship, and it's going to be really tough to revive the brand in the United States. So they might have to think about doing their indie thing, and they're very good in the UK. So with that being said, have a great week. We'll see you next week. God bless. Goodbye.